That is why mind has so much freedom as compared with form or force. It will be seen that, as each swarm meets the lords of flame on a different planet, it is a different shell that is influenced by them. This accounts for the differences in organization of the vehicles upon the different waves. It is a point closely connected with practical magic, because whatever body has received the impress of the lords of flame, that body will be used in working upon nature forces. The lords of form likewise, when developing upon a globe, exert a similar influence upon their fellow sojourners there, but being peculiarly and intimately related to the matter of that globe, their interreaction with the shells of the sparks of the junior swarm is peculiarly intimate. When, however, the lords of mind have passed the nadir and begin to return up the globes, conditions of evolution are much complicated, because the freedom of individual action of the divine sparks has been enormously developed by successive periods of epigenesis, and in their diversity of reactions they produce the diversity of development in the swarms they contact. Chapter 18. The goal of evolution of a life swarm. We have traced the progress of the first three life swarms as far as the first plane. We will now trace the mode of their return up the planes. It will be recalled that the lords of mind complete the full cycle before returning to the sphere of divine influence wherefrom they issued. The lords of form evolved by means of a gradually lengthening series of journeys. In the first journey they progress as far as the sixth plane and return again to the sphere of divine influence. On the second journey they progress through two globes to the fifth plane, and so on down the planes until, on the sixth journey they reach the first plane. It will thus be perceived that upon the seventh journey of their outgoing they have already within themselves the capacities of reaction of all the planes and have nothing further to acquire in that respect. They have, however, to learn the lessons of the return journey, which will be dealt with in their place. The evolution of the lords of mind resembles that of the lords of flame in that it is a continuous journey, but at each pause, while they wait their turn for progress, they make original additions to the sum of factors of their reactionary complex. It will have been noted that, from the time the first swarm set out on its homeward journey, two evolutions will always be progressing in a globe at the same time, and the senior evolution profoundly influences that aspect of the junior evolution which corresponds to its own nature. This is the prototype of the process known as initiation. These matters cannot be dealt with in detail until other aspects of the subject have been considered. They will then be reverted to. It will be remembered that upon each plane the divine sparks acquired a fresh mode of reaction. They learnt of a plane, but were limited by the conditions of that plane. Upon the return arc they are not seeking to penetrate into, and master the conditions of a fresh plane as a means of evolution, but to withdraw from the plane and thus to free themselves from its limitations, while at the same time retaining the capacities for reaction they learnt thereon. This freedom can only be obtained after the complete synthesis of reactions of that plane has been achieved by the group spirit of the swarm. The synthesis is so complete that the reactions, being mutually compensating, become automatic, and demand no individual compensating. Habitude renders them subconscious, and the consciousness of the sparks, being directed to the reactions of a higher plane, they function according to the type of that plane, and their reactions are such that the atoms of the lower plane can no longer accommodate themselves thereto and therefore are dispersed. In this way the lords of flame withdraw up the planes. The lords of form progress by a different type of evolution. For each lesson they learn they teach to the logoidal consciousness before progressing further, and they await the impact of the logoidal image which is the evolutionary impulse which sends them forth on their journey. When they have been out to the uttermost plane and returned for the sixth time they have given their final message to the logoidal consciousness, and the seventh journey, which, as far as they are concerned is a repetition, can add nothing anew to the logoidal consciousness. It is their function, however, upon each globe to make a contribution to the forces of formation in the manifested universe. Their essential type of reaction is the stereotyping of forms and they influence profoundly the atoms that are built into the plane body of the planetary spirits of each globe. The lords of flame influence the evolving life sparks of each globe they are on. The lords of form leave them untouched, but influence the globe itself. Were it not so, this stereotyping of form would prevent evolution in the divine sparks. As it is, the stereotyping of form in the vehicles of the planetary spirits has determined in them the most primitive type of vehicle of manifestation, the sphere, an inorganic accretion of matter around a nucleus of attraction. It is the lords of mind, however, who exert the predominating influence on the swarms they contact on each plane, because, owing to the fact that they have achieved individualization, they are able to act upon individual sparks and are not merely obliged to influence a group mind through a general atmosphere. It is a peculiarity of all vibratory objects that they tend to tune with their own vibrations all objects of a slower rhythm than themselves, being only limited in this activity by the vibrationary capacity thus influenced. And whereas the lords of flame were limited in their power to raise vibrationary activities by the sum total group reaction, the lords of mind, should individual junior sparks show special reactionary capacities, are able to raise them individually. The sparks thus developed exercise a profound influence on the life swarm of which they form a part, for they are initiates. On the outgoing arc of evolution, initiation is performed by contact with the life of a swarm on the returning arc. Thus, initiation enables the initiate to cut across the arc of evolution, and to obtain the reactionary capacities by sympathetic induction, instead of the lengthy process of experience. Initiation on the returning arc is, however, a different process, which will be considered in due course. The function of initiates on the outgoing arc is to enable their swarms to adapt themselves more speedily to the condition of a newly achieved plane, because they have acquired some concept of the nature of these conditions. Thus, initiation on the outgoing arc enables an initiate to immerse himself more readily in matter. Let us now consider the condition of the first swarm when it returns once more to the sphere of divine influence. It issued forth as a cloud of sparks. It returns as an organized set of magnetic, capillary, mass momentum, centrifugal, centripetal, and vertical stresses. The logos is then confronted by an organization that approximates in influence to its own. Whatever reactions the logos may impose upon its universe will encounter the organized opposition of the first swarm. The logos, however, works not in opposition to that which it has itself created, but acts as a synthesizer between the cosmos by which it is influenced, and the organization which now forms a conditioning influence in its universe. By its perception of this organization, a corresponding image rises in its consciousness, and the great entity is thus conditioned by the conditions of its universe, and therefore all cosmic influences are transmuted under the influence of that conditioning before they are communicated to the universe. The logos has now acquired the same reactionary capacities, by contemplation of the evolved swarm, that the swarm acquired by experience of the planes. Therefore, the divine entity and the divine manifestation vibrate synchronously and are at one, and, after a period of compensating action and reaction, they evolve a rhythm. The logoidal vibrations are extended to the group spirit of the swarm, and the group spirit of the swarm is absorbed in the consciousness of the great entity. The individual sparks, however, maintain their individuality, but their group spirit is no longer a separate entity but has become at one with it, and therefore it is at one with the logoidal consciousness, so that the oversoul of the swarm is the logos itself. This is the goal of evolution of the life swarm, the at-one-ment of the group soul with the logoidal consciousness, whereby the logos received the fruits of the evolution. It may now be asked, whither go the sparks? In the case of the lords of flame, they are so completely withdrawn from the manifested universe that they cease to be upon the planes of manifestation but remain at the central point of impactation, maintaining a balancing action and reaction between the manifest and the unmanifest. Some, however, succeed in making contact with their corresponding cosmic atoms, and these pass out of the sphere of logoidal evolution to experience the life of a traveling atom in the cosmos. Those that do not so proceed remain as conditioning influences in the universe and, being at one with the logoidal mind, are able to execute the logoidal will. the forms which they built in the course of their evolution form part of the framework of the universe, and as such, are stereotyped. But, whenever the Logos desires to effect compensatory actions in response to the uncoordinated responses of an evolving universe, it is by means of the Lords of Flame thus freed from the bonds of manifestation that this is achieved. And he made his ministering spirits a flame of fire, and flames of fire were his ministering spirits. The Lords of Flame are concerned in basic natural forces. The Lords of Form likewise, on completing their evolution, undergo similar adjustments, and when the Logos, having received a new concept from an evolving swarm, desires to impress an archetypal concept upon a swarm and process of evolution, it is the Lords of Form that are employed for the process. Their method we will study later. The Lords of Mind likewise, upon their return, are assimilated to the Divine Consciousness, and employed as mediators between the Logos and his universe. Now be it recalled that the Lords of Mind established individuation, and they deal essentially as individuals with individuals, whereas the Lords of Form deal with group souls. The Lords of Mind are the initiators of our present evolution and as such, will receive much reference in the course of these teachings. They it is, who, able to react upon all planes of manifestation, range up and down the planes, performing adjustments by exercising compensatory stresses when the faculty of epigenesis has disordered an evolution. Upon a plane where they function, they are simply a center of force, therefore they are unperceived by the denizens of that plane. They can, however, by the assistance of a vehicle of that plane, detach certain elements to form nuclei for the building of vehicles in the matter of that plane. Hence the concept of the virgin birth. And therefore it is that those who are known as the saviors are always represented as born of agamogenesis. They bring their own life impulse. Nothing but the accretion of matter is required for their manifestation. In this outline we have traced the development of a manifested universe up to the point where the divine sparks of the prime swarms have returned to the Logos, achieved atonement and function as intermediaries between the Logos and his universe. It will be recalled that the Logos has three prime aspects. Each of the three prime swarms was projected into manifestation under an impulse of one of the prime aspects of the Logos and may therefore be regarded as the representative of that aspect to the universe. These three prime manifestations are of a different degree to all the others. Subsequent life swarms develop under the Logos plus the Regent Sanders. In addition to the three prime aspects derived from the rings of the cosmos, the Logos also reacts to the influence of the 12 cosmic rays. Subsequent evolutions are characterized by the influence of the rays which predominated at the time when they received the logoidal impulse. As these cosmic impulses are received by the Logos by means of the zodiacal initiations, the group spirits of the swarms thus developed are known as star logoi. These are closely concerned with types in the evolving sparks. It will thus be seen that each swarm, after it has achieved atonement with the Logos, performs the part of compensator or counterpoise in the work of evolution, for, with the coming in of epigenesis, comes also the risk of developments out of harmony with the logoidal nature. Likewise, these evolved swarms are employed to convey to the outgoing sparks the fruits of evolution that have been achieved, and thus save a needless recapitulation of reactions already stereotyped in the universe. We have now concluded a description in outline of the evolution of the Logos and his regents who condition all future evolutions. This concludes the second section of the teaching. Section 3. Chapter 19. Tabulated summary of influences. 1. Logoidal influences. A. Cosmic influences acting on the Logos, the rings, and the rays as exemplified by their zodiac, and other great entities. B. Modifications of logoidal consciousness produced by reactions to the evolution of the manifested universe. 2. The influences of the manifested universe. A. Plane conditions. B. Influences of star logoi. C. Influences of planetary spirits. D. Influences of other evolutions sharing the same planet. 3. Factors of the manifested universe. These factors are stereotypes of reactions which always function on appropriate occasions. Being built up by preceding evolutions, they form the inheritance of each subsequent evolution, and are innate capacities. There are very many. We will enumerate certain of the major ones: (a) law of action and reaction equal and opposite, (b) law of limitations, (c) law of the seven deaths, (d) law of impaction or the transmission of action from one plane to another, (e) law of the aspects of force, or polarity, (f) law of attraction of outer space, (g) law of the attraction of the center. Under the influence of these factors evolution proceeds, and to terms of these factors it can be reduced. The logoidal influence predominating at the time that a new phase is being developed determines the type of life or vehicle evolved. Chapter 20. Cosmic Influences. We are now considering the influences under which human evolution takes place. You are accustomed to the concepts of astrology which delineate the planetary influences affecting the personality. The subject of our discussion is the cosmic influences affecting the individuality, which may be termed sidereal astrology in distinction from planetary astrology. You have no doubt realized from previous teaching that the universe evolves subject to the determining influence of the logoidal consciousness, and that the logoidal consciousness experiences in its turn the influence of the cosmic tides. Therefore, the universe is modified indirectly by the action of the cosmic tides. The cosmic tides consist of influences of the positive and negative phases of the rings. These phases affect the cosmos as a whole, so that the 12 cosmic rays and the 7 cosmic planes function alternately with their positive and negative aspects predominating. Which means that when the positive phase predominates, the forces of action, the apex shall we say, may be conceived of as in the center. When the negative predominates, the apex is at the circumference. Thus in a positive phase a circuit would consist of an inflowing and outgoing. In a negative phase, an outgoing and inflowing. The action of a ray therefore, differs greatly according to whether it be experienced under a positive or a negative phase of the rings. So that a great entity may be conceived of as circling round the cosmos in its orbit, and receiving the influence of the rays as it passes through their areas, but receiving them alternately under their positive and negative aspects. The evolution proceeding in the universe will be correspondingly modified according to whether that evolution takes place when the logos is experiencing a positive or negative cosmic influence. The calculating of these influences constitutes sidereal astrology. This is the astrology which relates to the lives and fates of group souls and planetary spirits. It concerns the nativities of the heavenly bodies themselves. The basis of this calculation is the precession of the equinoxes. The equinoxes and the cosmic ray phases correlate, and there are 4 phases to a ring phase. On that basis you can calculate out the sidereal influences affecting evolution. Remembering this, however, that these influences do not affect human lives directly, but affect the planetary spirits which, in their turn, influence the mental and karmic atmosphere in which a soul reacts. And the planetary spirits themselves are modified by the tracks in space described about them by the evolution of a group soul of any life swarm that is progressing through their sphere. So that, although the logoidal influences are immutable, modifications of these influences are introduced in the course of transmission. So that the astrology of the ancients, though fundamentally true, is not strictly accurate at the present day. The developments caused by evolution must be allowed for. Therefore, those aspects which, in primitive times might be interpreted as war and bloodshed, at the present time might be interpreted as a conflict of ideas. The planetary aspects at the time of the Darwinian controversy would have meant war at an earlier stage. Sidereal astrology should always be calculated in relation to the race before any horoscope of an individual of that race is cast. Group mind and group souls are subject to sidereal astrology. Individuals to planetary plus sidereal astrology. Work out the equinoctial positions. From that you can calculate the ring influence. This will enable you to know whether the heavenly house is in its positive or negative aspect, and this will tell you what aspect of the logos is in function. Whatever aspect be thus energized will stimulate the corresponding aspects in all manifestations. Breaking down and building up aspects depend on the cosmic rings, and the particular form of destruction or construction depends on the cosmic ray. These prime conditions underlie all others and frequently falsify the best-made calculations. In addition to these, the regular and calculable influences of the cosmos, there are the irregular influences caused by the passing of other great entities upon other spheres or planes of the cosmos, as previously referred to. You will find the particulars on this subject in a previous chapter. There is no method which you are capable of grasping whereby such influences can be reduced to a calculable system, but they will be found to correlate with the approach of the comets. Some, therefore, are known to you, for some of the comets have their orbits calculated. Some are still unknown to human thought, but give adequate notice of their approach by the disturbances induced in other heavenly bodies. The astrology of the comets have been but little worked out and would repay attention. The best method of calculation is through the spectroscopic record of a comet. This will enable its chemical composition to be deduced, and the proportions of the elements will give the necessary clue to the nature, especially the proportion of the metals, which, being referred to their appropriate correspondences, will furnish the key to the problem of good and evil, the fruit of the tree of knowledge. Thus it can be seen of what the force is the support or pillar, for that which it supports will have its activity intensified, so that, which should be a negative phase may unexpectedly become positive. The basis of calculation of sidereal astrology, then, is the equinoxes, subject to irregular modifications of other great entities, many of which can be calculated by means of the comets. The comets, it may be said, are aggregates of atoms drawn together by means of the electrical disturbance occasioned by the influences of entities upon subtler planes. That is to say, great cosmic beings that have no matter of the seventh cosmic plane in their composition and therefore cannot form a universe which is perceptible to the senses of a first plane solar evolution. These comets do not generate a group soul which can evolve. They are sidereal idiots. Artificial elementals are their souls, and they are concerned certain of them with cosmic scavenging. To them are sent those rare units of an evolution which, by the persistent misuse of epigenesis, have dedicated themselves to destruction. The comet, in its orbit, takes such souls to the outermost bounds of the cosmos wherein there are no influences to which they can react, and the cosmic atom images, which go to the building of their component parts, cease to be reflected. That is the unknown death. Such units cease to be completely, and there is no reincarnation, or fresh start. Even their karma is disintegrated and touches not the group spirit. It is said of such that they exchange their planet for a comet. They elect to go far and fast, but they go too far and too fast for their forces of cohesion, and the comet to which they have yoked themselves, when it returns again to the sphere of our solar system, is found to be without them. Solar evolutions proceeding from the solar logos, which is your God, synchronize roughly with the ring influences of the cosmos. That is to say that under the positive cosmic influences the logos will give the stimulus which sends a new swarm upon its journey, but the length and speed of that journey synchronize thenceforth with nothing else, because there are so many counteracting influences, save that it will have to make its passage through the nadir at a time when the cosmic tides are turning. But it may have one or more cosmic phases upon its outgoing arc. The change of a phase will always precipitate an evolutionary crisis, but until a cosmic tide turn occurs, when an evolution is approaching the limit of its developmental capacities, it will not venture over the dead center, but will perform epigenesis and bide its time. Those beings which essay the task of passing the nadir under unfavorable influences failed to make the transition, reverted along the original path when the cosmic tide came later, and become demons and devils. Hence the distinction of the left-hand path. The left-hand path can be gained in two ways: by deliberate crossing of the arc from right to left after the nadir has been passed, or by retroversion before the nadir has been passed. This has reference to the squaring of the lodge. You will see by this that it is necessary to watch the cosmic tides when undertaking any regenerative work in relation to the spiritual guidance of humanity. The great constructive period of the 19th century afforded a valuable starting ground for any spiritual impulses. The first quarter of the 20th century was a phase of destruction. You will observe that movements upon all different phases that took their rise during that period, especially during its middle years, have come to naught. The concepts may have been sound, but the season was unpropitious. Chapter 21. The Locoidal Relation to the Manifested Universe. It will be realized from the study of the foregoing papers that the Logos is related subconsciously to the cosmos and consciously to the universe. Remembering also that the Logos is affected by the positive and negative cosmic phases, you will perceive that under the negative influence its consciousness will tend to subjectivity and therefore the cosmic influences will predominate in the Logoidal consciousness. At the same time that the Logoidal influences will be withdrawn to a great extent from the manifested universe, which will be left to the control of forces which it had itself generated in the course of its evolution. These periods are referred to as the days and nights of Brahma. Be it noted, however, that there are the greater and lesser nights. The relation of the Logos to his universe will be best realized by remembering that a phase of evolution is to the Logos what an incarnation is to a man. The fourth sending and returning of an evolutionary life swarm conveys the same harvest of experience to the Logoidal consciousness as the individuality of a man receives from the incarnating personality. The Logos itself corresponds to the divine spark. The universe, in its group soul aspect, to the individuality, the evolutionary swarm to the personality. Bearing these correspondences in mind, you will be able to interpret the Logos in the light of the man, and the man in the light of the Logos. The formation, development, and evolution of a universe corresponds to the evolutionary cycle of the Logos, so that the Logos develops by means of a series of incarnating impulses which are evolutionary life waves or swarms. Each succeeding evolution penetrates deeper into the form aspect of the universe, renders it more complex in its organization, brings it to a stage further in the development of that perfect balance of forces which it is enabled to reach as a whole. When the entire manifested universe acts as a whole, it is fully self-conscious. And soon as self-consciousness is established, objective consciousness becomes possible. The universe then becomes aware of the cosmos. Reciprocal consciousness between Logos and universe is established. We have then, first, the self-conscious Logos. Secondly, in order that the Logos may establish objective consciousness, the need of an object of which it can be conscious. The Logos, therefore, projects its concept of itself and becomes conscious of that. The concept, in its turn, develops self-consciousness through successive phases of evolution. The Logos is aware of these changes as they take place, and is modified by the knowledge. Finally, the universe, having attained full self-consciousness, becomes objectively conscious and is aware of the Logos. But as the Logoidal consciousness has developed, step by step, with a universal consciousness, they are identical, the only distinction being that the Logos has a background of cosmic conditions, and the universal consciousness has a background of mundane conditions. The Logos, then, absorbs into itself the universal consciousness, because the cosmic forces, by their attraction, overcome the cohesion of the mundane forces. All these systems of organized reactions, which held together the atoms of the manifested universe, are therefore withdrawn from the plane of the manifested universe into the cosmic state of existence, and the atoms, of which the manifested universe was composed, return to their primary condition of tangential movement, uncoordinated by any superior force. This is the lesser chaos and is referred to expressively as Old Night or the Night of the Ages. It will be seen then, that the goal of evolution is the development of a consciousness which can unite with the Logoidal consciousness, and pass from the phase of a reflected, or projected existence, a phenomenal existence, to that of a real, actual or noumenal existence in the cosmic state. This can only be achieved when the entire manifested universe is perfectly synthesized. This represents the pralaya or night of Brahma. a lesser pralaya, occurs at the completion of each phase of evolution during the time in which the Logos meditates upon the concepts presented to it as the fruits of that evolution, thereby modifying its own consciousness.